for you to drink that water that you have, many people touch the system for you to be able to have that water. You have a person who has to check those pipes. You have a person who has to check the water, the treatment of the water. You have somebody who check that the chemicals are correct. And after that water is delivered to you, we're going to charge you. So we need people who knows how to do billing, project managers like me to ensure that the equipment is protected. And from that, we need administration people. We need human resources to hire people. When we talk about water jobs, it's not only the plumber, but it is beyond that. It is almost 2,000 agencies of, you know, water agencies. Now, we are not counting the electrical agencies in the United States, more than 2,000 ones.
Hello, and welcome to the new Mission Career Transition Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Caprellian, and I'm joined by my co-host, sister, and talent management pro, Alexandra Caprellian. We interview service members that transition to new careers, DoD representatives, and civilian HR professionals to provide you with lessons learned you won't get in a transition class and to help you transition with confidence. In this episode, we're going to talk about a whole underground world of careers. I say underground because what's underground is connected to your faucet, and your faucet puts the water in the glass that you drink every single day. To get that water in that glass, there are HR professionals, finance professionals, and water technicians who have skills that, ooh, guess what? Our service members have those skills. So if you're looking for a different place to look for your next career, we're going to talk about that with Freddie Armijo, who will give us an idea on what a career in public utilities looks like. So stay tuned. Freddie Armijo, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Man, it's great to have you on. I was just telling Sis that I met you when I was a snot-nosed second lieutenant at Combat Engineer Platoon with Marine Wing Support Squadron 371 in Yuma, and how appreciative I am of you keeping me out of trouble and in the good graces of my staff and COIC, and how it was a great partnership between the three of us. It was certainly a formative time in my career, and I'm so happy to have you on because we're going to talk about something that a lot of people don't think about, a whole different career field literally right under their nose. But before we get into that, I want to talk about some basics so that we can introduce listeners to who you are. So where'd you grow up? How'd you join the Marine Corps, and what'd you do throughout your career?
Oh, sure. So I grew up, I am originally from Peru. So I was in Peru until I came to the United States. And the reason I came to the United States was to join the Marine Corps. And the reason I wanted to join the Marine Corps is because I watched Heartbreak Ridge. And I wanted to do that. So definitely that is how ultimately I ended up in the Marine Corps. And what I have done to the Marine Corps, well, I am a 1371. I am a combat engineer. My last location was a first MEF with a G4 as a in the Marine Expeditionary Force, as a G4, what is this called, chief, for engineering chief for the MEF. But before that, I've been stationed in Hawaii, being stationed in Yuma, being stationed in Camp Pendleton, Iwakuni, Japan. And I think so I have done four deployments, two to Afghanistan and two to Iraq. And I think so. That's it.
Yeah. Well, that's a quick round the world.
Yeah, and, that's it.
Yeah. Well, and we might have others from, you know, other branches of service listening. So I think it's fair to say, like, your experience before you hit senior staff in COIC and kind of went into the management realm, our combat engineers in the Marine Corps are kind of a hybrid between that, which would be civil engineering, because we do some of the construction flavor, and that which the Army sappers do, which is a lot of the combined arms mobility and breaching and so on and so forth. And so, Freddie, I think throughout your career, you kind of had a taste of all of that, right?
Correct. So I have done, through my deployments and with different units and the missions, I have done from building K-spans in Iraq to building airfields and also in Iraq or airfields right here in Catalina Island for civilians, in support of civilians. I have also built stuff for the Boy Scouts in West Virginia. You name it, I've been involved during those times in different facets of what the combat engineers do and the mission to support not only the Marine Corps in itself, but other organizations too, through different programs.
That's great. And I know you retired. What year did you retire from the Marine Corps?
2019.
Okay.
That's February 2019.
And that's great. So you're kind of mostly out of transition. I don't know if you feel like you're still transitioning. I know that it's not just getting into a new career or a new job. It's more of a holistic process of transitioning a whole new chapter in a life. And maybe you can talk about that later. But what made you want to transition out of the Marine Corps and retire? Was there something that happened, or what was your decision-making process?
Well, I think there were many factors that, you know, actually helped me to make the decision. Until that point when all these things happened or all these things came into the table, my mission or my goal was to be the first Master Gunnery Sergeant of the Marine Corps. So something that, of course, everybody, you know, couldn't accept that anybody could be the Master Gunnery Sergeant of the Marine Corps because it's only a Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. But I think I realized all the time that I have given to the service was not the same sacrifices that I have made for my family. In many ways, I have made more sacrifices to the organization than to my family. And it got to a point where I needed to put roots into somewhere. And it was my time to PCS. And they wanted to send me from Camp Pendleton to Camp Lejeune to be the chief engineer for 2nd CEV, operations chief. And I decided not to. I decided to stay here in California and, you know, live in my house at least for more than 3 years, have my son finish actually high school in the same school that he's been, you know, most of his high school time allow them to actually have some sense of community. And also I was tired driving out, you know, from my house because that's the only kind of we can afford around the Temecula Menifee area, being able to actually stop driving hour and 35 minutes one way in the mornings and 2.5 hours back home at the end of the day.
Wow, that's a long drive from Temecula to wherever One Marine Expeditionary Force is on Camp Pendleton.
Yes, and Del Mar.
Okay. Right. Wow. Well, they sound like all very reasonable, all very good reasons to make that decision. So, at what point in time did you make that decision prior to when you retired? Like, what was the lead time from decision to the time that you were officially retired from the Marine Corps?
Because of the time that I had still in contract, for the time that I was allowed to be able to submit papers and to get it approved, I would say around 14 months for retirement.
Knowing you, you probably started developing a game plan. What did that thing look like?
I started developing a thesis. First of all, I needed to find out really what I wanted to do. I have many ideas in what I wanted to do. I know that I have some strengths and some weaknesses. And definitely my trying to get back into what we call the civilian society will be also an issue. Having so long being in the service, so you start seeing different things that other people don't take attention, and maybe for them it's not a priority, but for somebody in the service it is. So I start develop a program and saying, these are the things that I need to do to be able to do the things that I would like to do. I don't exactly know right now what I want to do, but I'm going to do these things to ensure that, you know, I have a better chance to get those things. In this case, I was, you know, by the time that I was actually separating, I already have my doctorate degree a business administration. So I thought that that would give me a good chance to get something.
I'm sorry. I should have been calling you Dr. Armijo this whole time.
No. Nothing to do with that. It's just Freddie. But I realized that it was all the things that I needed. It was just not that education, but it's all the things that I needed to be able to transition. That was my game plan. So get the stuff that I need so I can get the stuff that I would like to have, to do after the Marine Corps.
Were there certain programs you utilized to help you prepare for your transition?
Yes. So the SkillSoft program, I was the second cohort for the program.
The SkillBridge program?
Yes.
Okay.
The SkillBridge program. I was the second cohort, and I was recruited brought in by Northrop Grumman for one of the programs here in Rancho Bernardo in California for the Triton program. So I did that with them for 3 months. I utilized that. I also utilized the COOL program, which is it provides payment for certifications. I use LinkedIn. I use Coursera to do that too. And I use Hire Our Heroes to help me out with my resume.
Mm. Yeah, Hire Our Heroes is so much bigger now than I think it used to be. And you're the first person we've had as a guest to speak to the COOL program, or the Credentialing Opportunities Online Program. Correct me if I'm wrong. That's where if you have enough time on contract, the military will essentially pay for your certification that's applicable to your MOS. Is that accurate?
That's accurate.
Okay.
That's accurate. And nevertheless, they also will provide the funds for certification for all the things that you are interested on. And if you have enough time in service, they will also pay you to maintain the certification for the PDUs, depending on which certification you choose.
That's great. I know that each branch of service has different criteria on what they fund. I know that the Marine Corps, at least right now, because I looked it up, it's for enlisted. It can be any rank in the enlisted ranks, or they will fund credentialing for officers that are specifically in the cyber MOS AUK field. But I think other branches of service, they might have different requirements. You might be eligible as an officer for a certain certification, but no, that's some great information that we haven't been able to touch upon.
Oh, he was great. I use the COOL to get my PMP certification, and I think the test was $400-something, but not remember. So, and they pay for it for me to take the test.
I think it's a little more now. It's like 550, but that plus the training itself could easily be over $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now for the training, it was a little bit different. So through Hire Our Heroes, the program from SkillBridge, they allow us to take one course on the SkillSoft program, the online services that they provide.
Okay.
And you could choose which class you wanted. They had a human resources class. They had a PMP class. These are not the Syracuse University. It's also provided by the Skill Bridge program. This is the SkillSoft. And then the SkillSoft under their online classes, they had the PMP. So I took those classes for free through the Hire Our Hero program. And those classes right there gave me the educational hours required for me to take the certification test.
And you had mentioned, I think you said Syracuse. Is that anywhere, is that associated with the Onward to Opportunity program or the Syracuse Veterans program?
Yes. So Syracuse also is cast as a SkillBridge program, and they support the SkillBridge program where you can get certifications for like human resources, or you can get certifications for PMP. But you are not project management, I will say. No PMP, but project manager. You can get those certifications from there, through the SkillBridge program.
Okay. So you started, when you exited the service and you retired, you started to work for Northrop Grumman. And how long were you there?
Okay. So during my Stonebridge time, I was still in the Marine Corps. So what the program provides you in, under the Skillbridge program is that now it's, I think, 6 months, but in my time when I started, of course, was 3 months. So they allow me, and during my 3 months before even my terminal leave, to be able to still be an active duty Marine, but actually working for Northrop Grumman in a, it's called a corporate fellowship. And I was there with a condition that it was a position open for me. And if I didn't accept it, they will, you know, give me a letter of recommendation and, of course, the experience that I will acquire in Northrop Grumman. And I was offered a, position in Northrop Grumman here in Rancho Bernardo. But if you know California from Temecula, Menifee area to Rancho Bernardo, where Northrop Grumman is also the same distance driving. It's like driving to the first MEF in Camp Pendleton. So it would have taken me, again, hour and a half in the mornings and probably two to three hours in the evenings going home. Mm. So I had to decline the offer. But of course, by that time, also I had other offers from other, in this case, city of Riverside. Few cities have offered me a position by that time.
So after you got out of the Skillbridge program, what did you get into?
After I got the Skillbridge program, I went straight to work for the city of Riverside. I was still in terminal leave when I started working for the city of Riverside.
And what do you do for the city of Riverside?
So they hired me as a project manager because they were creating a project management office and they were hiring project management professionals to be able to work under this PMO.
What kind of projects did you work on?
My first project, and I think so this is how you define really what I'm doing today, it was first in a safety project with a vendor. So literally it was for me to handle the entire project from the moment that we created the vet to the moment that the project is complete. So I was in charge of the project. Through that project, we did a lockout and tagout. It was a project. We needed to be compliant. We lockout and tagout. And of course, I had my experience, no as a company engineer, but as, you know, safety, that we know that the Marine Corps, everybody is a safety person, a safety individual, how true it was in the outside, is that I realized that the Riverside Public Utilities in itself were a little bit behind in compliance. So from there, from the lotto, because I have to go through all the facilities, they kind of gave me another project to be able to do compliance for the safety and security of our facilities. And Riverside Public Utilities have more than 130 facilities. And so I start doing assessments for these facilities to comply with regulations for EPA. So I did regulatory compliance for them. And from there, evolved my position to do not only emergency preparedness, I do safety, I do project management related to physical security, and I do physical security in itself for RPU and everything in between.
You almost have, yeah, you've got on your LinkedIn profile, and I troll everybody's LinkedIn profile, you've got essentially two jobs. I mean, one of your job descriptions is project manager, and the other one is physical security officer. And yes. And I think a lot of us understand inherently what a physical security officer does. It's in the military, it's probably managing the anti-terrorism force protection program. Mm-hmm. If you're in military law enforcement, it also, or even the intelligence occupation fields, you probably do vulnerability assessments. What's it like being a physical security officer, though, for public utilities?
It's very, very rewarding because you realize you are giving some knowledge to people who organizations, they probably don't have this knowledge. And they really rely on your expertise to be able to provide that. And you are correct. I do vulnerability assessments. I look, like we've been trained to do, to look from the other side and see what we will be able to do bad for these, you know, facilities or for the people that are inside these facilities. And from there, we develop ways how to minimize these risks. So I do that for Riverside Public Utilities and, you know, for all the facilities that they have and for the personnel that works within the facilities. I create a standard operating procedures for safety-related issues, in this case, security-related issues, but also every now and then dipping my hand into safety. So in many ways, I'm also doing a lot of safety for Riverside Public Utilities.
So the threats and the risks to various critical infrastructure, I'm sure some of it is either human-driven, whether it's human-driven, or I'm guessing some of it might be natural disaster-driven. Is that accurate?
That's accurate. And you have to add the technological ones. And in technologicals, you have not only the machine can break, for instance, the machine doesn't have enough life. It's something technical that it can go bad. It's just a machine just too old and it breaks. So that comes also as one of the threats that you have to look into it. So because of that, even so I was a physical security manager, I have to start working in continuity plans and succession plans and, you know, preparations for that. As you see, you continue evolving. But if you realize also is that we have done this during our entire time in the service, in the Marine Corps. We have done this and we're still doing it. And you continue to do it during your entire career. What is going to go wrong is going to go wrong. What is going to go bad, you know, going to go bad.
It sounds like you're right at home. I mean, that's
yes.
That's something that you're eminently qualified for, considering your previous MOS, what you did in the service, and then continuing to serve, in this case, the city of Riverside, in those two positions, project management and physical security. I'd like to kind of transition a little bit and talk about the very set of careers associated with the thing that's often right under our nose, as I had mentioned before, and that's career in public utilities, or let's just call it water jobs, right? I mean, I fill up a glass of water and sometimes I think about the plumbing associated with it, but there's a whole lot more behind that. And as the chair of the Veteran Engagement and Transition Committee for the American Water Works Association, California, Nevada section, you probably can talk us on a little bit on what kind of jobs or careers there are available for transitioning service members. So first of all, what do you do with the Veteran Engagement and Transition Committee?
Yes, so AWWA. I never thought myself about this until I actually started working for the city of Riverside, for Riverside Public Utilities. And it is that for you to drink that water that you have is many people has to being able to touch the system for you to be able to have that water, to open that faucet and the water to drop in. So you have a person who has to check those pipes. So you have a person who has to check the water, the treatment of the water, where the water comes from. You have somebody who all the time has to check that the chemicals are correct. And after that water is delivered to you, we're going to charge you. So we need people who knows how to do billing, project managers like me to ensure that the equipment is protected. And from that, we need administration people. We need human resources to hire people. When we talk about water jobs, you know, it's not only the plumber type of person, a plumber that goes and does plumbing, but it is beyond that. And I think that people don't have really this understanding. It is almost 2,000 agencies of, you know, water agencies. Now, we are not counting the electrical agencies in the United States, more than 2,000 ones. And those, every organization needs, for instance, project managers. Now you multiply, even if it's one multiplied by 2,000, they need 2,000 project managers. What about human resources personnel? RPU has two assigned to us. So if you put two for each agency, now you're talking about, you know, 20,000, 40,000, 40,000 you're going to need at one point. The issue right now that is crossing through the water industry is just the same that many other organizations and agencies is the graying of the workforce. At this time, the water agencies have more open positions and they don't have enough people to fill them. And they are worried. They are worried about, they are trying to find out ways how to be able to recruit personnel, to find people who has, you know, not only the technical knowledge, but also the, you know, the just the knowledge of being able to work, a person who can lead, a person who can follow instructions, a person who is able to do a standard operating procedures, a person who is safety conscious, a person who is able to, you know, mission accomplished, to take care of his people, to be responsible. It sounds like somebody. I think so. In many ways, the veteran population is very fit to get these jobs, to this position, these opportunities. What I do in AWWA, the Veterans Engagement Transition, I have the honor to serve with other people who are also veterans or are in some way connected to the military, spouses and so forth, to meet together to find ways how to be able to reach veterans, for them to be able to apply to these jobs, to be able to, you know, to get them informed, to show them that, hey, this is a great opportunity and nobody's really taking advantage of it. Jobs are there. It comes with benefits. Everything is there for the veteran population to be able to take this. Spouses is also in our minds. We're always trying to bring spouses to the group. So what we do is we try to work with agencies to be able for them to make their job postings better and friendly, you know, because this is one of the big problems too. If you look in the other side, when I was trying to transition, everybody tells you in TAP training, yeah, oh, you need to figure out what the job posting entails. So a lot of people, I think service members, they are transitioning, they look at the job posting and they says, well, I don't know what is this. And so because I don't know what is this, I don't want to apply for it. So what we are doing is trying to work with HR. We try to work with as many agencies as possible and say, look, I know that in the water, for water people, is SCADA. This is a system that we work. It's an ICA system. It's an industrial control system. It's a system who opens and closes things. Just like, you know, we tell a machine to open certain chemicals at certain times. So these machines have to be calibrated. And the people who actually works in these little mechanical and electrical things are called SCADA techs. Have you ever heard about SCADA techs in the military?
Not specifically, no.
Yes, that's correct. But we do have them. We do have what is called distributed operations, meaning is somebody in a computer is doing something for a generator to work, for something to work. So we are trying to make this, like I said, this job postings more friendly and for veterans to say, look, don't sell yourself short. You have so much value out there. And the water agencies are looking for it. I get contacts all the time from water agencies says, how can we reach the veterans? How we can do this? How we can do that? So we invite them, of course, to join the committee and for them to be able to participate in fairs. And they were able to reach, but of course, you know, the Department of Defense is not very friendly sometimes. It is. It's not.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yes, it's not. But, you know, and after that, you have questions about certifications, for instance. So water, depending on the state, you need certain certifications. Now, I can speak only for California and Nevada because that's my area. A co-chair in my committee has been a fundamental person in being able to pass a California Senate bill, 1588, to be able to allow military, kind of help military people in California and Nevada to transition to water jobs, to be able to be certified if they got the training during the time in service. So there's still the details have to be worked on, but the bill is there. It's just trying to make it easier. But it's other states around the United States that are easy, meaning is like for instance, Virginia is one of them where you can literally get out of the military, like if you're being a utilities water person, and just bring your certificate, your military MOS, you did it 214, and they will give you a certification as a water operator. It's just certainly states that do that already. But like I say, people is not looking for them. But water agencies are looking for them all the time.
That's interesting. I think a lot of people sometimes look for large companies and say, okay, well, maybe that's what I need to apply for. And they look at the job boards or maybe, I mean, and there's certainly more powerful tools there are now, but the public sector sometimes doesn't do a very good job of advertising those positions, right? And
correct.
And these positions we're talking about, they're not bad paying jobs. They're actually, they're very good paying jobs.
They are. They are. For instance, I'm just giving an example, and I don't, you know what I mean? Don't. But I was telling somebody not too long ago, another veteran, and I was mentioning to them, I says, you know, do you really know how much water operator, a starting water operator, actually makes in the state of California? And the guy says, well, I don't know, maybe, you know, I don't know, $60,000-$70,000. I say, no, actually, the water operators who are the junior ones are the guys who get the overtime because they, you know, the senior ones don't want to do the overtime. But the starting pay right now for most in Southern California for a water operator, the starting base pay is between $80,000 to $90,000. Yep.
And that's starting base pay.
It's starting base pay. And it comes with all the benefits, of course. You know, like you get 10 days for instance, you get 10 days of days off for holiday. And after that, you get 2 weeks, the first 5 years, 2 weeks of time off. And you can get, you know, all the other perks that comes with a job. A retirement for the public, you get a retirement, of course. Medical, dental, you get all those. And you get to get half time. And for instance, for me, I get to telecommute for, you know, 2 or 3 days a week.
So can we go back for a quick second?
Sure.
So just to clarify, if you're in the military and you have gained skills based on whatever you're doing in the military, depending on which state, you can actually transfer those skills into a possible certification.
Correct.
Can you give some examples of some skills that people in the military that might have now that are recognizable that could possibly transfer into a possible certification?
Sure. I am speaking about the water ones. To the water ones, I'm talking about distributed operations. So if you are a utilities soldier, utilities marine, depending of the state that you are, you will get certified as a water operator. Welders, for instance, welders in the Marine Corps, in certain states, you only need to know you have the welder experience in the D214 for them to be able to give you the certification to be a welder. And if you use, for instance, the journeyman's program, you get out actually with the credentials already to work as a journeyman in anywhere in the United States.
Does that include maybe those that are not necessarily in utilities MOSs, but maybe in electronics repair technician MOSs, those that might have computer programming experience? I'm sure they're probably either maybe not a quite a lateral move, direct lateral move into those water technician positions, but maybe somewhat compatible?
Correct. Yes, Chris.
Okay.
So that is for all types of these jobs, the certification. So this AB 1588 actually saying that the state, the California state, is working and provided an easier path for military members transitioning to be able to obtain certifications when they get out, to be able to, you know, acquire a job, a position, without having to go back to school for something they already have learned.
I know that the board that you're on represents California and Nevada, but that's a subsection of the overall American Waterworks Association. I'm assuming that's the national association that advocates for that industry. Is that correct?
That's correct. They advocate for the water for the water agencies and you know the water professionals and water technicians and everything else. How I got to them, believe it or not, I participated in a conference because they were talking about physical security for water facilities, and I got in there. And somebody mentions, hey, you know, it is a committee that is forming that is about veterans trying to help, you know, trying to help the veterans for us to be able to also be able to recruit it. And this is how I volunteered. And this is how I end up in the committee and ultimately end up as a chair of the committee. Because I think one of the things that you leave from the service is you always going to be, you have this innate call to always take care of service members. And now that I am, I guess, in the outside, I will not stop trying to help all those who are, you know, who are after me as they transition.
That's a, almost a new mission for you too, right? So it's a way of continuing to give back.
Yes, yes. And it's very rewarding. Like I said, it's very rewarding when they get jobs, they get positions, they get offered positions, you know, so.
You know, I think this is this kind of opens my eyes because I know that, like I had said, sometimes the public sector, particularly at the local government level, they're not as well known, but they're right under your nose. And so for those that are maybe separating or transitioning out of the military, retiring, and they want stability and they're going to go to a place, but it's not a major metropolitan area, you know, there's a place where they can afford a home. Well, that home's connected to power and it's connected to water and it's probably, unless you're on a septic tank, it's connected to sewage. And there are industries, public utilities that are all making that thing function and they require HR, they require accounting, they require technicians, they require project managers. And to me, it's like almost an untapped opportunity right under our nose. In a potential career and a job waiting for us once we get out of the military. So that's, to me, I mean, it's a, if it hasn't, you can't see it, but there is a light bulb right above my head and it just went off. And, and I appreciate you bringing those opportunities to light. I know, I value your time and I don't want to take too much. We're getting close, but you know, as we're closing up, I'd like to ask you, are there one or two things that you want listeners to remember as they prepare for their own transition?
Sure. One is prepare as early as possible. Even if you are not planning and retiring, for instance, this year or next year, you're going to get out. You're going to transition by you making the decision or by the service telling you that it's time for you to move on. You should start preparing now. And whatever you need to do, you know, start working it so that way it can help you by the time you have to make the decision. Don't wait until you make the decision to do those things. And second is, don't forget about those who are after you. We have the connection with these groups of people that are coming after us. They are still there and they're going to be coming out. And it is an opportunity for us to be able to help others. And by helping others, because you want to help others, you're going to start learning many more things to be able to provide this help. So it's also enriches you as a person and, you know, allows you to be able to be true to yourself.
That's great. Hey, Freddie, we might have missed a question or two. How can listeners get in touch with you, ask questions, or obtain additional information regarding careers in public utilities?
Sure. They can find me in LinkedIn, just like, you know, I think so you're going to post it. So yeah, you can find me there. You can message me there. I'm pretty good sending messages and accepting invitations. You can join. I post jobs. In my LinkedIn, I am very active in my LinkedIn. 4 years ago is when I lost my free LinkedIn account for veterans, but I'm still a full, LinkedIn member. And I do it because I want to stay very active into the LinkedIn account. Yeah.
I have one quick question. So I went to the AWWA Career Center and I'm seeing all these jobs that are up. Even if I'm never in the military, I can see how this can be actually very transferable. What is a CPM, project development manager? Do you know what that is?
CPM, project development.
CPM.
Is that the smaller brother of PMP? I think so. That's what it is. Certified project manager.
Okay.
Yeah.
Certified project manager. Okay.
I think there are two credentials. There's one credential you can get, which is kind of an introduction to project management, and it's a credentialing that you can get if you don't have enough hours to meet the qual for the PMP. And then once you have enough hours accumulated to apply, you can apply for, get approved to take the PMP examination so you can get that certification.
And I want you to add this, Chris. So imagine that one of the jobs says you need to have the certification for water operator, whatever, to get the job. Even if you apply and you don't have the certification, because the people is needed, they will offer you the job with a condition that you have to finish your certification in 1 year. Okay? Many managers and utilities in general, electrical, water, they hire people with a condition. Do you have a PM certificate from Syracuse University, for instance? That is not a certified project manager, okay? You are going to a class, you go to Syracuse University, and they give you a certificate that says program project manager. You can get a job as a project manager with it. PMP is, of course, the highest standards, but that is often, and more than often, is just recommended. And if the organization really needs you, they will hire you with a project manager certificate with a condition that you will complete your PMP. And guess what? If you are working already for that organization, guess who's going to be paying for you to get a PMP?
It's going to be the company that hired you,
or
the utilities department that hired you.
Yep.
That's a great point. It dovetails on what you were saying. Like, some people look at a job posting and they think I'm probably not qualified. I think it's more encouraging to hear like, no, like if you that's something that you want to do, and that's something that interests you and it meets your needs and you have something to offer, apply for it.
Yes.
And negotiate, yes, right? Because they
correct, may- correct. Yeah. So, and this is what we're saying. We're telling the veterans, don't sell yourself short. Put your resume in. Give, the things that closer align with the job position, but give your strength. Sell your strength. They didn't realize, for instance, that I was a safety guy. Like I have, I am a certified OSHA trainer. They didn't know that, but they know now, and they're like, oh my gosh. Yeah. So people don't realize that. Veterans sell themselves short all the time. And like I says, our committee also is telling HR agencies that says, give a chance to the veteran. Let them plead their case in front of the interview panel. Because if this is what I hear, and I've been in a few hiring panels, and I hear all the hiring, backgrounds, informations when it comes to the time is, what the most choice is for somebody is going to do the job other than somebody who knows how to do it, but is not going to do it. So meaning, maybe a certificate would take you to get an interview, but if you don't have a certificate and you prove with your experience that you are able to do the job, they will hire you other than the person with the certificate.
That's some valuable. Thank you for that. That's great. Freddie, I really want to thank you very much for coming on the podcast, sharing this information with our listeners, with me and Alexandra. Thank you very much for your time and for what you're doing for veterans, because hopefully somebody's listening and they had a light bulb go off as well and are going to be certainly looking at the very utility services that are provided in the place that they're living and see that maybe there's an opportunity for them to be a part of that in pursuing a new career. So thank you very much, Freddie. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you, Alexandra. You are all both doing, an awesome job helping veterans to be able to make the careers and decisions. So you all deserve to thankful from, committers like us, for people like us that are trying to help these veterans. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Freddie. I'll be in touch. And Freddie Armijo has left the studio. Yes.
It's so interesting because I think what a lot of people get hung up on are when they look at these jobs, it's so niche that they feel like they have to hit the requirements of every bullet point on these job descriptions. And you really don't, like you said, you really don't have to. Like if you don't have the certification, that's okay. Because it constantly, when I'm looking at these job descriptions, it says something like, or relevant experience. And that's where military members can actually really focus in on. You have the experience. It's just a matter of how to transfer that information. And And it's really, it's hard to do, but it's, I think the biggest message here is if it sounds like something you might want to do, don't hesitate in applying for the job, because you never know that there might be somebody who gets your resume and says, yeah, I think this is this might be a good fit. And then you just have a casual conversation. And that's how it all starts.
Yeah. Great point. I got two other takeaways. One is, all right, when you get an idea of where you're going to be transitioning, where you're going to be retiring to, take a look at the public utilities postings, go to their website, go to the city website and see what they have to offer. I mean, I was blown away. I was looking at this water technician posting. He was talking about entry level, but base entry level between 80 and 90K in California. 80, 90K in California in Riverside is good money. You could be getting out as a corporal and moving into that job. I mean, and then there are senior positions, senior technician positions. Get 3 years experience, apply for that. That was like 100 to 120K. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, unbelievable, unbelievable. And it's, you don't have to go out and not to say that you shouldn't try and go and advance your formal education into a bachelor's degree, but good Lord, maybe you don't need to. If that's what you love doing, take the time to use the programs that we have, the COOL program, the Credentialing Opportunities Online Program. I'm glad he mentioned it, because if you're enlisted and you are in some type of special trade skill that's similar to the civilian world, you should be looking at COOL and getting the certifications. I think a lot of times in order to advance in the military, they want you to use the military training. So they're going to look at, well, did you go to this military course or did you go to that military course? And what sometimes we don't put enough emphasis on is the credentialing opportunities that you could get. Well, they may not necessarily be as beneficial for promotion to the next grade in the military. It'll still help you in that realm. And it's also going to help you on your transition, but you should take a look at it long before you actually get out, because sometimes you have to have a certain number of months remaining on your contract for that branch of service to pay for it. So that those were the two takeaways. Look at the public utilities or look at the city website and see what their job postings are. And number two, take a look at getting credentialed for certain things that you already have skills in that are transferable to the civilian sector. And do it sooner rather than later. Even if you think you're going to be making this a career, you never know. There might be a life circumstance that causes you to think twice, and maybe that causes you to get out. It's what happened to Freddie. He looked at his family, said, "I don't want to do it to them. I've been putting them on the back burner." I mean, he had a son that was already in high school, and you know, I'm not there yet. I have a younger daughter. She's not there yet, but I'd imagine once she gets into freshman year or sophomore year, she's not going to want to move. She wouldn't want to move. Mm-hmm. And if there's an opportunity to transition into something that you're going to be just as happy doing, and you know, it's your time to go, then you have the credentialing and you're already prepared. So great takeaways. And I'm really happy we had Freddie on the podcast also. So I could tell him, thank you for not letting my butter bar self get into trouble. Well, this wraps up another great conversation. And if you're listening, thank you very much. I hope you like what you heard. And if you did like what you heard, you can support our podcast by giving us a 5-star review on or whatever you think we rate. You can do it on that platform that you're listening to right now. Maybe you're on a run and you're listening to Apple Podcasts, but maybe back in the office, you listen to Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and other major podcast applications. So you can find us there. You can also find us on Instagram at New Mission CT. That's New Mission Charlie Tango. We'd also love to hear your feedback. You can DM us on Instagram, or you can send us an email at newmissionct@gmail.com, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can. If you're preparing for your own transition, know that I'm right there with you. So until next time, stay focused.